The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them, so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals. Whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation, Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Welcome to the MMA Roadshow, episode number 253. My name is John Morgan. Cole Coffee is with me here in beautiful, sunny Las Vegas, Nevada, here at the Casa de Cole Coffee on a Thursday afternoon, January wrapping up. But I'm telling you, I look outside, I'm here in the expansive Casa de Cole Coffee grounds out here. The sun is shining. It's about 60 degrees or so out there, you know.
The real feel, 62. It says it's 57, but it definitely feels like in the 60s.
You know, maybe a little chill in the air. Enough for a guy like me, a Texan, to put a coat on.
A jacket over top of your shorts.
Yes, exactly. A Buckeye like you is just rolling around in a T-shirt.
We're good. I saw somebody today when I was out running some errands, saw a guy that was – I don't know if he was trying to exercise, but he was just in T-shirt and shorts. I was like, look at you, bro. I was like, you are going hard. But then I was like, I bet he's running, so he's probably warm. That was a strong play. I was like, this guy is willing the summer to come back early.
I'm telling you, man, you can't beat it. Life in Las Vegas is good. I mean,
this is a nice time.
Listen, we got beautiful weather here. It does get a little hot in the summer. I'll give you that, but
it does.
We don't have to deal with winter. There's no state income tax. You know,
it's true.
You know, we got cost of living's not too bad. It's a good. I'm just saying, it's a good place to be.
Good
great restaurants, entertainment.
We were just talking about that early. Like, you know, when you're in some places, you're kind of limited. You know, you might have one or two little small restaurants that is different from the norm and that everybody sort of gravitates to.
No.
But besides that, it's your Red Lobsters. It's your Olive Gardens. You know, I always joke because, you know, around holiday times is when my family always sends the restaurant gift cards, which, thank you, family. I love them dearly.
Gotta appreciate it.
You know, the only time I ever go to Outback is after I get one of these cards. But we do actually have an Outback here, but it's funny, you know.
Yeah, there's a decent steakhouse or two around
the
town.
There's a few steakhouses you can go to, and, you know, and even just like the different types of food, you know, whether you want Mexican or Asian food or whatever.
Might not have Bloomin' Onion, though.
That's true. I've been, you know, instead of the Bloomin' Onion, I get I forget what they call it, but it's just like the petals, the onion petals. So instead of like the big massive,
right.
If you don't want the full Bloomin' Onion, you can ask for, I think it's like the petals. I don't go there enough to actually know what the real name is, but you can ask for something less, and it's good. They're like almost like little onion French fries deal or something. So, yeah.
Fancy.
Yeah, it was good. It was good. But, the steak is not as good as you're going to get at some of the proper steakhouses here in town. But all in all, I mean, like, there are so many reasons why it is nice to live in Vegas. And even, like you said, you mentioned the state income tax or lack of.
That's right.
It goes a long way to have a little extra money in your
I'm check. I'm just saying, if the Convention and Visitors Authority wants to sponsor us or whatever, I mean, we're shouting it out for Las Vegas.
But they have some openings, I think, after they had their corruption shit going on recently.
Oh,
so then maybe there's some openings.
Well, there you go. Look us up, guys. Look us up. All right, well, listen, I want to say, by the way, episode number 253. I am very proud of this episode. 253 consecutive weeks, by the way. We have never not delivered on a podcast, not once. That's almost 5 full years.
That's crazy.
Of fresh content every week. And by the way, I have been on every single one of those. I tried to get somewhere it was all coffee and no cream, but that never happened. We never got a full coffee episode.
And that's why the podcast is still around.
That's why it's still around. 253 consecutive weeks. Recently had the sickness that I went through with the flu and all that, but we made it through that. But I'm going to say, I may be more proud of this episode than any ever because, bro, you're like 12 hours away from going into surgery, and you said, no, John, I want to get together and do the podcast. Yeah. Let's do it.
It's 12, I'm not good with math, 18 hours?
Yeah.
Something like that. Roughly 7:30 tomorrow morning, I'll be going under. Yeah. Well, I mean, honestly, too, I'd rather almost be doing this and talk about fighting MMA and something else instead of just sitting in my head thinking about the oncoming surgery because it does you no good. It does you no good.
Sure, you've been doing that for a couple days, a couple weeks now.
It's been a couple weeks.
Yeah.
You know, ever since you know it's coming and stuff. But no, this is nice to kind of just change it up a little bit. You know, do this before, then got to pick mom's up from the airport. She's coming in for this. So, yeah, I mean, it is what it is. And I do want to say thank you for the people that have reached out and said things on Twitter and whatnot. I really, really appreciate it. You know, it's funny with stuff like this. I wanted to put a whole, like, Facebook post together and, you know, because that's half of how I talk to half of my friends and families on that. But every time I started thinking about it, I just didn't have the energy to keep going, you know. Nothing sounds right, you know, and how you're going to try to word it. And I don't want it to be like, hey, all, you know, send me something to feel better, because ultimately that's what it is. You want the good vibes,
right.
you know. But part of it too, you know, like I'm not a big religious praying person myself, but I do like the access to a large pool of friends that are religious and praying types.
Like, I'm not saying I can speak to God, but if you would for me,
but if y'all got a direct line to
put in a good word for
the man or woman upstairs, feel free.
That may
to,
or may not exist.
That may
in
or
whatever
may not
form
exist
you think it does or does not exist in.
Form. However many limbs it might have, whether it be a spaghetti monster or not. I do appreciate, though, those that have reached out and did it. I mean, I think anybody, you know, I think that's the part we all think about is, you know, when it comes down to it, when you're in the hospital, but it is just you and your thoughts. And even I think at the end of our lives, it's you and your thoughts and whatever beliefs you have. So I think any of those points in your life where you're able to sort of just reach out and sort of feel something from other people that you're not alone in this world, it does help. It does feel good. So I appreciate those that have helped out. And
for sure, you know, man, I saw a lot of those messages. So that was cool to see.
One of the funny ones that I saw today. Fuck, I gotta find it. And he was like, I can't wait to come. I want to say his name because, dude, it was fucking hilarious. I was like, dude, thank you very much. But it was like, X Shields. He's like, shout out Ken S. Hathaway. You'll get through this, buddy. Look forward to your questionable takes in the near future. Even that, I was like, dude is sending me good vibes and he's shitting
and
on me.
Busted your balls in the
I
same time.
I love it. So thank you, X Shields.
That's awesome.
That's pretty fucking cool. He's a Texas boy. So that's great. But yeah, I mean,
We'll keep the good vibes going.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Junkie's been great, and everybody's been good. And, you know, fuck, if we had to do this tomorrow during surgery, we would have did it because the show keeps going.
We just straight. Like, it might be better with you loopy off the, you know, coming off the anesthetic. And, you know, like, we see those videos where people say, like, funny stuff. That might be great.
Can you imagine this mouth with no filter?
Hopefully somebody's rolling on you tomorrow. Do you have some?
Well, it's gonna be my mom and Agent H is gonna be there. And
well, tell them to break the phones out and roll tape.
I imagine both are gonna be a wreck.
Yeah, they will be.
And it's funny because I know that H is gonna be a wreck, and so people are like, who do I get in touch? I'm like, I should probably give her number just to make it seem like, yeah, reach out to my girlfriend, but. Part of me is like, she's going to be a mess. I'm like, it's probably better to call my mom. Mom's been through some stuff, you know.
I don't think it'd be much different with my family. I think if I was in the same position, my wife might not be the one to talk to.
I'm like, can you put Eli on the phone?
Yeah, talk to my 7-year-old son. He's going to have it a little bit better together than my wife will.
Talk to Eli, please.
All right, man. Well, listen, we'll keep your head off this stuff for a little bit and talk some MMA. There's not a lot of fights happening this weekend, but obviously that doesn't mean that there's not stuff to talk about. It is Super Bowl week. If you're an NFL fan, I am not a fan of either the Niners or the Chiefs, so I'll be watching a little. But
yeah, I mean, it is the last point where we can watch professional NFL football.
At
that point, you just got to watch it.
It's just,
I mean, you can eat eat crappy food, you know, find a reason to get together. And you got to be happy for both those teams, man, just bringing that. I'm with you.
I'm not happy for the Niners, though. No.
Well, dude, they really have turned their stuff around, man. Just think about it. Like 2 or 3 years ago, were nothing. They were garbage,
right.
You know. And look at them now, man. Their defense is solid.
No. still not. I'm still bitter about the catch.
Still bitter.
I'm a Cowboys fan. You can't be cheering for the night. No, I guess I probably will cheer for the night.
It's kind of things like
I'll cheer
for,
yeah.
for the
night. Yeah, I think I was three years old at the time.
Hold a grudge much?
I think I was three at the time. Like, I remember the catch.
Wow.
I'll probably be cheering for the NFC. But, well, listen, I mean, Super Bowl does mean Radio Row, the world sporting media all comes together. And, of course, we got to see some MMA action out there. Jorge Masvidal and Kamaru Usman got into a little bit of a verbal altercation out there. And, you know, it was funny because the first tweet I saw about it, somebody was like, they almost came to blows. And I watched the video. I'm like, bro, they did not almost come to blows.
They're 10 feet apart.
Yeah, they're 10 feet apart. Masvidal's blowing kisses at him.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're not
But all
about
it takes
to throw.
In that situation is one of them to just flip that switch and move forward. Because when you look who was there, I mean, Jorge's manager's not going to stop him.
Right.
I mean, poor Dave Locke.
Dave Locke gets stuck in the middle
from
of
the, from the UFC.
He's the quietest, nicest guy.
He's not going to stop it. And they could have if they really, really wanted to. I'm glad they both refrained. It was enough that gives us something to talk about, you know, which is cool. But it's cool because, I mean, that's real heat. It's building into real heat between these two, more so than just the, oh, I'm going to talk some words when I'm up here on the stage after a fight,
right,
or whatever. It is generating some real heat, and that's the kind of stuff that ultimately it's just fun to watch.
It is.
I mean, if you can keep it clean on the outside, don't do something to where it's actually – if they would have came to blows, it would have left some bad mark on MMA. People would have said it's a bunch of thugs.
Somebody starts throwing a chair or something
right.
like that in the middle of media.
But now
row.
You get casuals; they're gonna be like, "Oh, these are the two guys that were on the NFL, you know, the Super Bowl weekend that were going at it, right?"
Right.
So the casuals are gonna start getting into it. I mean, so I love it. I love that there's real heat starting to bring between these two, and the fact that that would be an incredible fight. So to think that there's some real emotion behind it is pretty cool.
I like that it's building. I like we posted a clip. The Jim Rome show sent it around to us, and we were able to use it. But, you know, Masvidal, I thought, had a great line where he was saying, you know, Usman likes it when people talk trash. And it gets him riled up. He's like, so hold on. This isn't for you. This isn't for fans. This is for Usman. He looks straight at the camera and starts going at him. You know, he's like, I will embarrass you from start to finish. I mean, Masvidal's great. I will say – and I like Kamaru Usman a lot, man. I got to call a couple of Titan FCs with him back in the day, and you know, before he was champ. And I you know, covered his career on the way up, and I like him a lot. I will say that trash talk is not exactly his specialty. I was editing.
Both of them aren't really all that.
Well, but Masvidal's just got that swagger that, like, whatever he says, even though it might not be, like, that great a trash talk, it just comes off as cool, right? You're like, yeah, bro.
Wait, it gives you that look like, tell me that was bad, and I'm gonna come over there and I'm a two piece. Yeah,
so
tell me that cut was bad.
Well, listen, I was editing this piece this morning. Farah Hanoun wrote this piece. It was an interview that Kamaru did with TMZ, right? And I'm literally cracking up as I read this. I want you to read this quote. He says, "You know, he did have a great point. He said, listen, you know, I just beat Colby Covington and I handled him pretty well. And Colby Covington used to destroy you in practice. So think, if I did that to the guy that destroyed you, what do you think I'm going to do to you?" So I like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But here's the quote. "He saw what I did to the guy that used to punish him and torture him every day at practice. He saw what I did. Now he better shut his little mouth before I fill his ass with a bunch of that Cuban coffee. Keep running his mouth. He ain't going to nothing. He just ran up and didn't do nothing. I was Dolo." And two things here. First of all, I did not know Dolo was a word. I'm going to admit that.
It
and maybe
is not
it just shows
a word.
That I'm old. He tweeted it the other day, and I thought he just made a typo. I thought, because the S and the D are right there by each other. I thought he meant to say that he was solo, and he just typed Dolo, and it went out. But he said it in out loud, so he meant to say he was Dolo. I've since been informed that that is slang, meaning that he was alone. But if the word is solo, I was solo, why do you need a slang word that says I was Dolo? Like, it's like you're just making rhyming words. That doesn't need to be a word. So that's first off. I learned that that's a word, and I think it's a completely unnecessary word. The second part is, when he says he's going to fill his ass with a bunch of Cuban coffee, that stood out to me. But he doubled down on that one as well. Later, in another quote, he said, "Talk all you want, but I'm going to let you know, just like I did to that guy that used to torture you every day, I will fill your ass up with all that Cuban coffee." What does that even mean? I'm going to fill your ass up. I understand the Cuban connection there.
Hot coffee or cold coffee?
Well,
first of all, he's trying to give him an enema? Isn't there a coffee enema?
Yeah,
he's trying to help him out.
Looking out for his health.
Looking out for his health.
Colorectal health.
Colo. I'm rolling colo. Solo colo.
I just want to say the Usman trash talk game is not quite on point, but you said, I mean, Dana White the other day said, listen, everybody knows that's the fight to make. And I wasn't sure. To be honest, I wasn't sure because I think a lot of the public sentiment was Conor and Masvidal, and I did like that idea. But the fact that Conor kind of shut it down and said, you know, basically said that he wasn't interested in it, then I lost interest in it. You know, if you're not interested, then there's no heat. Now there's heat building here. There's stakes on the line. You know, it's the belt. It's the actual belt. I think it's definitely the fight to make right now. I'm going to agree with Dana White. I didn't agree with him that night, but knowing that Conor McGregor isn't showing interest, I think I agree too. I think it is the fight to make it at 170 pounds.
Yeah, when I sit here thinking to myself, Dolo, I agree. You know, there's actually a song, Solo Dolo. There's different slangs, but one says Solo Dolo means the lonely stoner, you know, because you roll and smoke by yourself. I don't know. I think that's absolutely ridiculous because it is so close to solo. Might as well just say solo. And if it's on the down low, just say down low.
Right?
Still same syllables. Two syllables. Is it that much easier to say dolo?
I don't think so.
Down low? I guess. I mean, maybe forming the W hurts their mouth or something to say down low. And we know things on Twitter, you know, just because you put something on Twitter doesn't make it true.
Maybe you were playing Scrabble and you didn't have any W's available.
Oh.
So you were like, Dolo. And then you had to sell it. And you're like, no, it's totally a word.
It's totally a word. And now that it's on Urban Dictionary, next thing you know, it's going to be in the encyclopedia.
It exists.
but in terms of the fight, I mean, this fight is, when it comes to what's going to be bringing the eyeballs, I mean, it's hard to think of another fight that, one, I think it does mean something for the division, but also it's just, we know that now the UFC has went into full entertainment mode, man. And it's just like, if it's not hitting all their buttons on trying to just create these things, it just seems like it doesn't happen. I think as for in terms of the most exciting fight that we would probably see from Masvidal, I mean, there'd be two fights for me that I would want to see the most. That would be Conor.
Right.
And it would be Kamaru.
Right.
This is the one that's going to happen.
Yeah.
The other ones, you know, is unicorns and fantasy talk. That's not going to happen for quite some time, if ever. But I love it. I love the fight. And the fact that they're into it, that's perfect for me. I mean, it's one thing when the UFC comes up with these ideas and they have to sort of sell it on a fighter and eventually a fighter comes around and do it. But this sort of thing is just making itself, and the fighters are taking it upon themselves to pump it up and make it happen. So, I mean, come on, guys. You only live once, man. So, YOLO Dolo.
YOLO
Dolo. Go solo, holo.
So here's the only thing that kind of stands in the way. I won't even say it stands in the way, but
folks, don't let your kids use the word dolo.
Please, at all. if you have any responsibility as a parent. Here's the only thing is, timing-wise, we know it probably wouldn't happen until, I would say, June at the earliest. I mean, we know we've got our pay-per-views lined up, right? We know April is Habib and Ferguson. They're not going to throw another title fight on that. Maybe
Won't they?
Get out of here.
But, I mean,
May.
But doesn't it make sense that if I don't even...
Oh, don't even say it, dude. Don't even say it.
Without saying it, you all know what I'm thinking.
You know what he's saying.
You know what I'm thinking. I mean, it's called an insurance plan.
Coming into your head.
But remember when the UFC has been on this run of two or three title fights for their major pay-per-views? Certainly wouldn't hurt facts to have a couple more.
It wouldn't, but I think it's the whole budgetary thing. You know what I mean? Like Habib.
As for how much money,
because I think Habib makes a lot of money.
That's true.
I think Habib makes close to
Conor.
Did
you think that Conor was going to make more money on that last one? Were you surprised that it was only $3 million?
But that's only his guarantee. I'm sure he made a ton on the back end.
But
I bet he made 8 to 10 is what I would guess.
With points?
Points and promotional
agreements. Do the point systems even work the same anymore with ESPN? Who knows if ESPN even agreed to that?
That's a good point. I hadn't talked to anybody about that. I mean, I know that it's less. No, I think I have talked about it since. They still make pay-per-view points. It's just the pay-per-view numbers are obviously less now because it's a different system.
Yeah, who knows? I don't know. I was just surprised. You're right. I didn't really think about the fact that that might not be the ending. But still just seeing that, I was a little surprised that it wasn't bigger. So,
all right, so we're not going to see it until June, I think, because Khabib and Ferguson is April. Now, May is maybe. Because May is 250, which is going to be in Brazil.
Yeah,
that's by what we expect is it to be Cejudo and Aldo, which of course makes sense having Aldo fight in Brazil. It is funny, you know. You talk about being in full entertainment mode. You know, how much did Dana the night that he's like, I kind of like the idea of Aldo next. How much of that was like, Aldo in Brazil would help us out a lot. You know what I mean? So that had to be part of it. I could see them maybe doing a second title fight there because I doubt Cejudo and Aldo are breaking the bank for the type of money they make. Yeah. So I could see him doing a second fight there. But, man, would you want to bring Masvidal and Usman to Brazil?
No,
I wouldn't think
no
so
way.
Either. You know, because you'd lose out
I think
on the media.
You would lose out on the media. And, I think the fans would love them, but those fans would show up to every, like, open media workout thing. But as for how that would turn around into actually – buying any sort of a pay-per-view or even going to the event, it just wouldn't get the same sort of result
I think
that you
get.
I think
you'd lose the
traffic. Have to be.
So here we are. So now we're saying June is probably the earliest they could fight. I would say June. Now at that point, now maybe you just go to July because you're talking International Fight Week, of course. So knowing that that's kind of the timeline, we do have Tyron Woodley and Leon Edwards coming up in March, and you got to think that both those guys would deserve to be a number one contender. So if we're already talking about waiting until July, I still feel like it's probably the I still feel it's the biggest fight you can make at 170 pounds if Connor's not involved in it.
Yeah,
I think you still stick with Masvidal Usman, but I would feel a little
July sounds pretty good.
Especially if Edwards went out. Now, Woodley, you know, Woodley was a champion, and a lot of people thought maybe he deserved a rematch, but that was a pretty one-sided fight, you know. So if Woodley wins, I'm okay with saying he needs to win another one. If Edwards wins, man, I feel like that guy's been put on the back burner for so long that he deserves a shot at it. And then, you still have the Edwards-Masvidal heat.
Right.
You know, I don't know. I think it's probably okay, but I just feel bad if Edwards wins that he still gets shoved to the back burner again.
Yeah, I mean, I do like, and you're right, you bring up that heat, but it almost makes sense that if he could have one more fight to put him on, if they did put that fight on that International Fight Week card,
right,
to put him on the same card as a follow-up, as a
it's
backup.
Not a bad idea.
Just in case something fell out, you know, you could always try to make that happen.
And then at least you know you're on the same timeline as the champ.
The same timeline.
So that way it's like, hey, can't run from me now, you know what I mean? Like, we got the timing lined up together.
Yeah.
I'm on the same card, all the same eyeballs.
And I bet if you told Leon, if you gave him the sort of least the thought that, not that there's ever any guarantee, but if they're like, hey, you know, by the way, if Masvidal is able to do this, if you're willing to fight on the undercard or under that fight, you will be guaranteed, you know, the shot after that. But you got to fight one more time.
Right.
As opposed to just saying, I believe I should be the next guy. I'm just going to wait, because we know that that does nobody any good, because it's all about that performance that makes Dana just do this juggling act. We've seen it time and time again. Somebody goes in there and has a stellar performance, and Dana literally in his mind rewrites the rankings, if rankings were actually a thing. You know, because he just immediately, he's like, you're right. That was a great performance. I think this is the fight to make happen. You know, it literally happens that quick. We've seen it happen over and over again. Even Kamaru, after I want to say one of his wins, did he fight at the Palms or whatever? I felt like we had a presser at the Palm, and he had a great performance, and Dana was just like, yep, this is the fight. We got to
make
it.
Right, and it was after everybody had been kind of shitting on him for the whole 30% thing and all that. So, yeah, you're right. I mean, listen, it's scary, you know, because when you're talking about, man, I'm right there up towards the top, I get it. It's scary to think, man, I can't keep going out there, because if I keep going out there, you know, I might not get my title shot. It might slip away, and I know that. And I know that title shot means a new contract and big money. And so I understand the logic of saying, like, no, I'll sit out and wait.
Yeah.
But you're right. In Dana's eyes and in the fans' eyes, if you're not out there, I mean – You don't gain momentum sitting on the sidelines.
And if there is something to be said about being known that you're on the same schedule as the champ or the guys
big.
Fighting, I think that is big when you think about it. And I think more of them are so worried about having a fight, and then say something happens, there's an injury or something that causes them to have to wait while somebody else is recovering or something themselves, I think there is something to be said about if you know you're on the same timeline as your next desired opponent, mm-hmm. that if everything goes well for both of you guys, you've done everything to keep yourself right there in the running. And if you put on a great performance, it's like gladiator shit out there. If you put on a great performance and the fans are literally screaming and crying your name and they want him more, Dana and them are going to make it happen. You know.
Here's to your point. So pulling up Usman's schedule just to remind myself a little bit of it. Now, January of 2018, he fights Emil Mech, and that's the one where he wins. And afterwards, he tells me in the back, you know, he's like, "Ah, man, I was only operating at 30%." I think people took it out of context. He was just saying, "I was not 100%." Now, he didn't say I gave 30% effort. He said, "Man, I was only operating at like 30% because I wasn't myself. But look, I still got the win." So I think it was taken way out of context.
Yeah.
But everybody was all over him for that, right? That was January of 2018. In May, he goes to Santiago, Chile, and beats Damian Maia. Good win, Damian Maia. Yeah. But those cards that are in the South American countries, not pay per views. They don't get much media. You kind of disappear for a little while.
Yeah, and it's only us watching them.
It's only us watching. Then he comes back in November of 2018. The Ultimate Fighter finale at the Palms, and he beats Rafael Dos Anjos.
Yes.
And from January until November, I think Dana was like, "I don't know about this guy. I don't know about this guy. I don't know about this guy." Fans were all over him. And you're right. I remember after that, he comes back and he's like, "How amazing is that guy? How can I not
make that fight? How can I not do this?"
And he gets the title fight with Tyron Woodley in March of 2019. Yep. So in 11 months, he had to go take other fights, but he took other fights and he went from a guy that nobody likes to now Dana's like, "Can't deny this man any longer."
And that's the thing. I mean, they're going out there and winning. And most of these guys will tell you, "I got to beat everybody anyways. You know, if you're going to put another fight, I'm going to get the money. I'm going to do whatever." But I think it's probably easy to say that knowing when you're still striving for the top than when you're at the top. You know, everybody wants to fight for that W instead of, you know, fight to get the knockout or fight to, you know, leave your name for somebody to remember. But you know, he went out there, he did what he did, and he stayed active, and he stayed in Dana's face, and ultimately, Dana was like, "Okay, that's it." So, I mean, I think in Leon's case, if that was a possibility, if timelines worked, I would just work to be as active, staying right on the timeline. Putting your name in Dana's ear, but ultimately, what's going to do it is if you get in there and you take whatever fight, because obviously, that, Kamaru and Masvidal is much more exciting for people to be for Masvidal's next fight as opposed to Leon. And this, offense to Leon. Leon's a kick-ass fight.
You're talking about one of the biggest stars in the sport right now. Masvidal is one of the biggest stars in the sport right now.
They are both so red hot right now that it would be dumb for them to do it. And if anything else, I mean, that's a great card to get put your brand back out there. If you get on that underneath it, fighting and knowing that during the fight week, you're going to see your opponent. You know, you could be in that media day like we've seen before. We've seen other opponents chirp at the main event, you know, and kind of just keep their name out there. There's ways that you can, you know, work the system while still putting yourself in a good position should something happen to get that shot.
I agree.
You know,
it's scary to do it, but I think that's the play.
All right,
the flip side of it. So I've taken Conor out of the equation with Masvidal. Just because, again, Conor doesn't seem to be interested in it. I know fans would love to see it, man. I saw the reaction, but it doesn't seem like he's interested in it. So I'm left right now with the idea, praying, of course, that he doesn't go box. I think I'm becoming more of the opinion that Conor Diaz 3 is probably the next fight.
Makes sense.
Yeah, just timing-wise with what's out there, with what's available.
It makes sense. I mean, ultimately, it's still going to be Conor's decision, whatever, you know. He looked so good. I'll eat the sad sandwich that I was like, "Man, go out there, cowboy, do your thing. Conor's probably not going to look good." He looked fantastic. He looked like he gave it every bit of effort to come bringing it. He looked fantastic. Mm-hmm. I just think that if he stopped and focus on boxing. One, if he put all that effort, he's going to come in looking better as a boxer than what he did against Floyd. But to have this momentum that he just got inside the MMA cage, it would just be a shame to see him sort of lose that to step away because he fought at such a high level. I'd love to see that go straight into another MMA fight.
Yep.
But ultimately, you know, I want the dude to get his money, man. If you can go out there and
no, that's hard, right? Like if you knew it was a $100 million payday again, which I don't know if he could get that again. Yeah. But if you knew that's what was on the table,
even if he can get 20, 30 million, if it's talking about getting another Floyd fight or even a Mac Pack or whatever, Pac Mac, whatever the phrase is that these kids, you know, Dolo Pac Mac. I would want the dude to get his money. So. I'm not going to be upset either way. At this point with Conor, you know, it's going to be a fun sort of spectacle regardless. Of course, I'd love to see him fight MMA because I like what it does for the MMA sport.
Right.
But also, too, I like hearing that the dude's going out there and just making mad money. It would be interesting, though. I thought the whole thing when we looked at Cowboy, I thought Conor or Cowboy, and you, there's still other whatever payoff to the side, discretionary, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But seeing the 200 and 200, I was a little surprised. Do you think, since that was so, it was sort of just thrown out there that, hey, this ain't that big red panty night. Say a fight does happen with Masvidal. You think Masvidal is going to try to hold out and make a push to make sure that that number is much bigger than 200? Yes. I think so as
Absolutely.
Well.
Absolutely.
I think so as well.
Knowing his representation, Abe Kawa.
Right.
Yeah. It
has to be. I was so surprised it was only 200.
Yeah.
I would have thought it would have been at least 1 million, like, on paper.
I would agree. Yeah, you're right. You know what? You're right.
You know, like, maybe he got that afterwards or whatever.
I'm sure he did.
But to have 200 and 200, knowing that second 200 was off the table,
yeah,
is just really surprising.
I'm sure
why not 500 flat fee? Something more. I would have assumed it would have been $1 million.
I would guess the Cowboy made more than $1 million. I would hope that he made more than $1 million for that fight. I'm thinking he did. But you're right. It would have been nice. Why not have the guaranteed one out there?
Have the guaranteed whatever.
Although at the same time, I know Conor likes to show the flashy numbers.
Right.
But is there really any advantage to people seeing you make more money other than them just hitting you up for more money? You know what I mean? Like, is there really any advantage to that guaranteed number with the CSAC, the one that's filed, the one that's going to be released publicly, or the NSAC, I should say, in this case? Is there really any advantage to that? And I don't think there is, other than, I mean, I guess there's two things. Number one, I guess it's good for the sport as a whole because
it's good
other
for the
people.
Sport.
But I mean
it's
for you
for
individually.
Sport.
For the sport as a whole, I think it's good because people, other fighters can go, I saw what he made. I want to make that. Yeah. I know
that
you can pay it.
But also, it does sort of set up an established pay history.
Right.
Think about like when you go and you apply for a new job, they're always like, well, what were you making at your last place? You know, what were you doing this?
That's true.
And it's one thing to say like, oh, well, I was making this. Oh, yeah, were you? Were you really? Well, it's like, bro, I got right here.
Here's the
commission proof that shows I was getting this and I was
getting
this.
That's a good point. Now,
it's a nice written record.
Now, Cowboy, I believe, is going to be a UFC lifer. I don't believe he's ever going to go to Bellator. I don't think.
No.
But you're right. For anybody else, and I just said, is there any advantage? You're right. That's a good point.
But it does help for the sport, like you said as well. It does help the sport, but it also it's nice to be able to say this is what I'm getting. This is what's really happening. And, you know, in the terms of just the benefit of just the overall sport, for any particular fighter to have it on record from a commission saying it, it's already helping the sport because it's one of those things that everybody's like, well, I think some fighters are getting paid this, but I'm not quite sure.
Right.
But to have it out there and to be legit on record, it is good for the sport.
It's good for the sport. All right, so the other thing about this Conor Nate Diaz thing, you know, you saw the tweet, I'm sure it was big news. You know, Nate came out and said that he wants to see Conor and he's apologized to Stephen A.
and Rogan
as well. I did think maybe, you know, I mean, Nate doesn't need to tweet that. So I did think maybe that was him saying, you know what, let me poke the bear a little bit.
It's not like he's buddies with Stephen A.
Unless
I'm surprised if they are. It's not like he need to come in there and defend his honor or something. I think you're right. He's just poking the bear.
I think so too. That makes me think that he's like, all right, let's get this fight together. Let's go ahead. I'm ready for it now. So
why not?
We'll see. I will say one more thing I want to say about Stephen A. Smith. I don't want to necessarily go into that thing considering it's 2 weeks old and we've talked about it a little bit. But the funny thing about it is I never believed that would be as massive of a story as it was, man. The comments going back and forth on that situation I mean, you could just see the numbers on our share count on MMA Junkie. You know, I mean, it was by far one of the most shared stories we've ever had in the history of the website. And I thought that was crazy. And then what was even crazier to me was people in the comments section are like, why are you guys covering this? Nobody cares. I'm like, nobody cares? There's more clicks on this than, like, almost anything we've ever done in the history of the site.
I mean, when it's coming down to the fact of you're having a huge sports organization like ESPN, the largest one, you know, arguably in the world,
right?
And having one of their people come out there and make their takes on the sport. One, I think a lot of people realize that as the sport became even more mainstream after the adoption of ESPN, now you're having their personnel, you know, being assigned MMA things, so they're putting their spin. These are the guys that you're seeing covering basketball, football, boxing, you name it. You know, they're prime guys, and so you're going to getting takes that maybe don't fall in line. So when these don't happen, you got to understand that they're still, these people are reaching a large mass population. So what they say has an impact on the sport that we all like and appreciate. So it would be a disservice in my mind for us to not talk about when a discussion about a fight that some people, you know, have strong feelings one way or another, how it went. It would be wrong to not talk about the particular story where one guy sort
of
slander, or not slander, some people took it as slander to how he sort of
I thought
said one guy.
Some way it was. I mean, I think what he said about Connor was fair. You know, the fact that, hey, we didn't learn. And I mean, we did learn something. But I, you know, when he came out and defended himself, and I think he explained it better when he defended himself in the second
from
video.
From the bathroom?
Yeah, from the bathroom. As he was
was he taking a deuce? He was dropping a deuce?
The video, yeah, bro, hold the camera up a little bit higher. So but
he didn't want you to see the toilet paper roll that was in the wall. He's like, I'm at the airport, y'all, right now, in the shitter.
That one, I thought he made a better point, which I thought was a fair point. Was like, listen, we did learn something about Connor. Like, dude, he's back. He's focused. We learned that. Did we see enough to think that a fight with Habib would go different the second time around? That's tough to say. And I don't know that had the fight gone longer, you would ever learn that in a fight with Cowboy Cerrone. I mean, a fight with Cowboy and a fight with Habib is two totally different animals, you know? So I thought that point was at least fair. But, yeah, the part that I think he didn't defend that he got wrong the first time was where he said that, you know, Cowboy quit.
I mean, there's ways to phrase it, you know, and I think there's ways. I think a lot of these people, especially in their occupations, are used to using shock and awe value. Say something, you know, where probably if you had moments to explain it, maybe say it in different terms, would probably come a less jarring. And I think a lot of the MMA fans, we are very protective of our sport.
We're definitely,
you know, we've all been along with the sport, you know, from its infancy, you know, some a lot longer. You know, I've only been around it for I don't know what year it is, 8 years, 9 years or something. And I've seen it come leaps and bounds. So the ones that have seen it for the 20 some years or whatever, man. I mean, it's, people are very protective of it and they want people to respect it. But I assume maybe it was this way too when, you know, football or some of the other sports started making it more mainstream. Maybe there were people that were like, I can't believe you would say that about my team. You know, I'm sure people had a lot of hurt feelings.
Well, it's funny because, and I thought you made a good point there, man, because I was kind of the opinion, like, why do I give two shits about what Stephen A. Smith has to say? Like, I know, first of all, I know what his job is. His job is essentially to be a professional troll, and he's really good at it. You know what I mean? He says things that fire people up, and that's why they make millions of dollars, because people
are going to love him or hate him.
I get it, man. So I totally, so on the one hand, I'm like, why do I even care what he has to say? But I thought you made a good point that, like, dude, he does have a big impact, and he does have a big platform. And someone like that that has that type of reach, that has that type of influence, shouldn't be able to say whatever they want and be unchecked.
Right. I mean, it doesn't mean you can't have an opinion and say, but it's just it comes with the territory. If you say something that might alienate and piss off, you know, 10 million people who love a sport that is very violent in nature, and if you're going to come and how dare you, especially of anybody, it's one thing if it would be two Brazilian fighters, all right, and I'm not picking on Brazilian, I'm just saying people that don't have I think with Cowboy, you're talking about somebody that, for Americans, we tend to love every fighter, we tend to root for all the fighters, but this is one particular fighter where if there was something that people rally behind,
he's one of the ones.
So if you take two random people from maybe another country that most Americans are like, eh, if the fight goes whatever, they probably wouldn't have
some random
two
Russian
shits.
Fighter who you can't pronounce their name and you've never heard him speak, so you don't even know.
So if somebody's like, oh man, I didn't really see in his good performance, it looked like he took a dive, people are like, eh, okay, whatever, I didn't watch the fight anyways. you know.
But not somebody they had that kind of an emotional
attachment. They have an emotional attachment to, so.
It was a huge story. I it's funny. I was very, very surprised it was as big of stories it is. But
I love that he made a response, that he actually made another video. I mean, it's weird. It was from the bathroom, but it was cool that he responded again.
Guy's busy, man. He's got to fit it in.
If he didn't really care about what people thought or didn't want to keep at least pushing it forward and make a better explanation of what he was, he would have just ignored it. And you've seen that happen tons of times.
And look, you got to respect the guy that's willing to say, hey, I said what I said because I believe it. And whether you think I'm right or wrong, these are my beliefs and I'm standing behind them. I'll actually give him some respect for that. You know what I mean? For saying, listen, I'm not just out here trolling and now I'm like, now I don't pay attention anymore. Like, no, these are what I believe. So I'll actually give him some respect for that.
I give him respect. I won't give his striking respect. Even I am better than his fucking striking. His striking was sad.
I said it on last week's episode, but I think as what I was talking about, where Frank Mir gave the perfect explanation that it looked like basically working on the shoulders or whatever. And I think he's come out and said he was like recovering from surgery or something, but it was an embarrassing clip.
So, yeah, it looked like something that was just starting, like –
talking about somebody that said something that upsets somebody. I wanted to get your take on this Joanna and Jacek thing because Joanna and Jacek, I think everybody probably knows by now, but I guess I kind of tipped my hand there, but I said all she did was she reposted a meme that was her in a gas mask, basically, you know, alluding to the coronavirus issue that's going on in China. And kind of poking fun at Zhang Weili from being from there. And Zhang Weili and her team, man, they came back with the perfect response. You know, man, they nailed it in their response. Yeah. Like, hey, man.
Very nice, very measured.
Yeah, don't joke about this. You know, these are people dying. And I thought Zhang Weili just nailed it. And I'm sure Brian Butler and the team at Sucker Punch had something to do with that as well. But they nailed it.
Yeah, her English was perfect in that.
Yeah, I mean, come on. Yeah.
She did a really good job. Google Translate really was on point for that one.
I think her team assisted that one, but they nailed it. But here's what. So this was funny. So I put a poll in there. This poll that software that we have on the site. I put it when I posted the story about this, and I said, listen, you know, did you feel that Joanna was out of line? And this is crazy. So the two choices were one, the strawweight queen stepped over the line. And two, seriously, grow up, Snowflake. And so that would be your yes and no, basically. But the poll was incredibly in half. 43% think she messed up. 43% said, come on, what are you talking about? And then in the middle, like kind of no opinion, was 14%. So that's why there was 43-43. But I found this interesting because I think a lot of people just don't like Joanna. And I think that's maybe why the response was so strong and so passionate, because what I feel like is that Joanna messed up, but I saw some things talking about racist and all this, and it's like, look, it was insensitive, because you're right, it doesn't seem like that big of a deal, but it is insensitive, especially when you consider the fact that people are dying in that country. But I don't think it's like the harsh offense where people are like, oh, she's a racist and what is she doing and what she said. I didn't think that. So I thought it was insensitive. I thought it was dumb to post on social media. I think you got to be careful when you post things like that, because you got to realize you're talking about a massive audience. But it didn't turn me off on her, like, oh man, this, you know, what is going through her mind right now.
Yeah, and when you put it like that, that certainly feels more like it to me. I mean, it definitely felt like it was more insensitive, because, you know, it's just a matter of, you know, people are sick, people are dying over there, and of course, all right, yeah, she's from China, so let me put on my mask, you know.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like one of those things, like, oh, too soon, like, the shit's still going on.
Right.
It's still going on, you know, people are still hurting, it's still
It's not even the getting aftermath, bigger. It's
yeah,
still
I mean,
happening.
It's still right in the middle of things, but when I look at it, it wasn't like, there were so many other ways that she could have put something that would have been more inherently what I would have called a racist thing. Right. Like, this just seemed like, all right, you know, like, there's real, this is real life or death shit. It's probably not something that we want to joke about.
That's it.
You know, so, you know, it doesn't strike me as being like blatantly racist, just being just really insensitive at the point.
It was a dumb moment, man. It was a poor choice, man. It was insensitive. It was a poor choice. And people are dying. You got to pay a little bit more attention to what you're posting.
Because there's a lot. I don't know. I don't want to put a bad example of other things that it would felt like. But, yeah, just poor choice of just doing something that probably could have a lot better. She could have took a bigger, higher ground and probably could have used the moment to bring awareness that, hey, my opponent is from a country that is suffering from an ailment right now that people are dying from. So while we're going to go in there and beat the shit out of each other, let's remember that life is bigger than this, you know. And my thoughts are going out to them.
She would have just gained some fans right there,
boy. She would have gained fans.
That would have been huge.
That's the thing. I mean, like, if there's ways that you can look at it instead of, you know, and maybe it was just her team or maybe it was whatever. It was like, ha-ha, look at this funny thing where instead of choosing a moment, now she had to backtrack and, like, cover her butt, and this is what I was trying to do. You would hope that her team would have chosen the team that she has around her. They could have found a moment to actually build herself up.
Cold Coffee would be the guy with the with the measured, positive, inspiring response.
There's only moment. They say that this tumor, it causes personality differences. So if I'm not a raging asshole, I have my moments.
The tumor's touching in some good places.
I know,
right now.
But it'll be gone soon, folks. It'll be back. It'll be back to you.
That's good.
Dirty old nasty coffee.
All right, well, listen, we talked about the fact that there's not a ton of MMA, but there is some this weekend. I did want to say one is in action. They've got a men's strawweight bout between Joshua Pasillo, the champ, against Alex Silva. I was starting to say the Filipino contingent is in action as well, so there's a lot of the good Filipino fighters. They're fighting in the Philippines there, so a lot of their roster's there. LFA 81 is on a Friday night as well. I don't have their finalized lineup yet. Access TV, man, when LFA was on Access TV, Access TV was great about their PR and sending out, weigh-in results and lineups and all those. And now that LFA is no longer on Access TV, that's kind of changed a little bit. So they need some help with their PR. And I think Fight Pass as a whole, they need like a PR agent that's helping everybody, man.
Yeah, but
Little organizations that have no budget that if you could help them all out, I think that would be a good thing.
I watched a fight that came on last night, the WXC.
Warrior Wednesday?
Yeah, Warrior
it's
Wednesday.
It's a funny little organization,
it
isn't
is,
it?
But it was like I just happened to see, like, I think an email came out, and I was like, what is this?
Yeah,
you never hear about. There's just too many organizations. Not that there's too many, because I love the fact that the Fight Pass is giving all these organizations a platform.
Oh, it's cool. There's a lot. Live fights almost every night,
yeah,
which is great.
But you're right. I mean, they need to try to push these things out. But, you know, again, that's a cost, man. The UFC PR people are already spread thin trying to cover all these.
No,
events
you have to
UFC.
Bring in some people. You have to bring in focused on that.
Bring in some more people just to work with all these other ones. And even then, you'd have to start divvying it up. Just take these three.
Yeah,
okay,
you're right.
Going to take these three, and you're going to take these three.
It would be another thing. They need it, though. I'm telling you, they need it,
you're
though,
right.
to help. Because you don't know. Give me a reason to want to watch Fight Pass. I mean, I know there's fights on here, but why do I want to watch this fight? Just because I like – I think that's MMA as a whole, right? Like, we all like the sport of MMA, but you need to know – why do I need to watch this? Is there a great story that I need to follow, or is there some real stakes here? Yeah. What's on the line?
That's what Dana's always loved about the Tough House. Mm-hmm. And even now, a little bit with some of the stories that come out night of on the Contender Series. You know, but that's the stuff that he was like, I'm trying to stay separate. I don't want to be, swayed any particular area. But when you hear the stories, it's like, oh, how can you not,
absolutely,
you know, want to give this person a contract? And the same thing with the Tough House. When they go in there, you have all those weeks of learning these backstory that is just – it gives you a reason to want – there's just so much events out there and so many fighters that I'm sure have so many incredible stories that – you know, unless you're from an area to where you can kind of go out and watch these guys either through their amateur or to be able to see them at an event.
Yeah, they're
maybe
in your backyard or something.
I'm sure there's just a ton of great stories out there that we don't know about that it would be cool to hear that stuff.
It was that Tracy Cortez versus Maria Agapova fight where he was like, I watched the packages. I just want to stop the fight and give them both deals right there.
You don't need a fight.
Y'all don't have to fight. You both get deals. And Liz, lastly this weekend, CFFC, Cage Fury Fighting Championships, is back in action on Saturday night on UFC Fight Pass. Saturday night. Fantastic broadcast team in action.
Really?
Myself.
Oh.
CM Punk and Jessica Penne will be on the call. I'm actually leaving tonight. The fights are Saturday. I'm actually taking a red eye tonight out to Philadelphia. It's at the Parks Casino out there in Philadelphia. So, yeah, be sure to tune in CFFC on Saturday night. So
I suppose.
So. What else do you got to do? You'll be laid up.
literally be laid up.
All right, listen.
I don't know if I can pipe in. I wonder if their TVs.
You can watch on your phone, man. That's the great thing about Fight Pass. You can be laying in a hospital bed recovering from surgery on your spine to remove a tumor, and you can still
watch
Cage
fights.
Fury Fighting Championships on UFC Fight Pass, no matter where you are. If Cole Coffey can watch it from the hospital.
I wonder if I can get a shout-out. I wonder if I can get a shout-out on the broadcast.
I think we
can
do that, man. I'll
if you find a way
in.
To work in coffee somewhere in there. It doesn't even have to be me just like, taking in the fights, enjoying some nice coffee here.
That's easy. I'll work that in somehow. I mean, Punk always works in like some Paul Felder reference.
Does
so,
he really?
Oh, yeah. He's,
that's hilarious.
He always finds a way to shout out Paul Felder. So I'll work out the cool coffee. That way
you figure it out.
It'll keep you interested from your hospital bed. All right, listen, speaking of other organizations, the PFL is still a few months away. It starts in May. But they announced some kind of cool stuff, man. They're doing this international qualifier series where they're partnering up with promotions from around the world to host one-man, four-night tournaments, basically. So you got to fight twice in one night, win two fights, and if you win that tournament, you make it in to the PFL. You get to be on the regular season roster, hopefully advance to the playoffs, and for that compete for that $1 million at the end of the season. So pretty cool stuff that they announced. I said it, you know, with Bellator and Ryzen, man, I love it when organizations can work together and figure out a way to do things. And you know, these smaller organizations to be able to partner up with a bigger promotion, have a place for their fighters to go to. It's a pretty cool thing. So this morning, actually, I had a chance to speak with the PFL CEO Peter Murray. And he kind of shared his thoughts on what's going on with that series and kind of where they're going and what they're targeting in 2020. So here's my conversation with Peter Murray.
Hey, John, it's Peter Murray. Sorry, missed your call.
Hey, no worries, Pete. How you doing? This still work out? Is a good time for you?
Yeah, it's totally fine. Good morning. I'm on my way down to Miami for the Super Bowl.
Oh, tough assignment.
Yeah, you know, I mean, honestly, it's just more about just catching up with a lot of folks in the business.
Well, listen, let's talk about this news. I mean, this is kind of big stuff for you guys, kind of expanding the global footprint. So I guess I just wanted to start out with figuring out kind of what the idea was. What was the concept? You know, why did you start thinking, hey, this is something, you know, we need to look at?
Well, we're a leader in the sport. We have a global stage, and we're in the market for signing the best fighters in the world. And why not do that in strategic markets outside the U.S. with credible co-promotion partners?
Yeah, that definitely makes sense. I mean, I guess it's safe to say the winners are automatically guaranteed a spot on the roster. Is that how it works?
Yeah, each winner of each tournament in the five countries will be given awarded a PFL contract.
It's Super Bowl week. You get a pass.
No, exactly. Exactly. Thank you. I appreciate it. And, you know, for an opportunity to compete in the 2020 regular season and the caliber of talent that we've evaluated to get into these tournaments, they're absolutely at the they have all the credentials to compete, you know, at the level that we require. So it should be really interesting. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of interest of fighters around the world to get into the PFL and fighters who are champions and top ranked with other organizations. So now that we're going into our third season, you know, we're upping our game. Relates to what it takes to get into the PFL. We're in all major conversations and when fighters go into free agency. So 2020 is very much about, you know, next level, but all fighters have to earn their way in. They have to earn their way on the roster to keep their spot. Okay. They have to earn their way in if they're a new fighter, you know, credentials plus, you know, in this case, they're going to have to earn it through fighting twice in one night and winning to get in.
I like the fighting twice in one night. I mean, you know, certainly that's something that's kind of a signature of your promotion. I wonder, I mean, was that more about just practicality because, you know, you want to get some elimination going, or did you just say, we want to test them?
We own that. We own fight twice. You know, fight twice in one night is part of the DNA of the league and our playoff, and why not continue to expand that model and test fighters' mettle, and the toughest fighters will get in.
Yeah, no question. Talk to me about the talent that's going to be there. I mean, are you having to go out and kind of find four people or approve four people? Or I mean, because I guess if these people are fighting for a way in, you kind of want to have some.
Yeah, it's no different. Right. Yeah, listen, no different than, you know, Ray Sefo heads our fighter operations and matchmaking. You know, Ray and his team is looking at, you know, all the data and analytics and film of fighters and again, their credentials. And you know, the first question that we ask ourselves about any fighter who's on a list to get into the league is, can this fighter be champion in this weight class? Does this fighter, that fighter, have what it takes to challenge the champion? And then looking at the other caliber of talent, get through. And that's really the first question. And so this is no different in the International Qualifier Series of working with our partners in each country and looking at, you know, we finally get down to four in each country that we feel are at the right level, right, in terms of their capability. And all other, you know, criteria that comes with it. But we said a no. You know, there are a lot of no's, you know, before we got to, you know, the top four in each country.
Talk about working with other organizations. I mean, this is not something we see a ton of in MMA. I mean, you know, the UFC famously doesn't co-promote. So, I mean, this isn't a straight co-promotion, but logistically, you know, how difficult is it to work with other promotions and set something like this up?
Yeah, we're doing things differently, and for us, the way we cast the net for talent is a lot different than the other guys. And we're pretty confident in our brand, in our platform, in our format, and to work with regional promotions. You know, we operate on a global stage. Those other promotions are regional. And, you know, our mission is to reimagine and grow the sport and absolutely expand the sport, not only in the U.S., but certainly outside the U.S., where there's a tremendous amount of business potential for us.
No doubt. You guys are working with UAE Warriors in the Arab Emirates. Have you named the other promotions that you're working
with?
You
know, we haven't, John. We haven't done that yet. We will be doing that over the next 2 weeks, so we'll be in touch. I mean, our partnerships are lined up. We just don't have the details ready for announcement. But yes, we have agreements with four other organizations.
Got it. And obviously the prize here is the chance to get into the field for the season and hopefully the $1 million. But I mean, is there a financial gain here for the fighters that win as well? I mean, is there money on the line, or is this more just about the opportunity?
You know, it's more about the opportunity for the contract with the PFL. That is the prize, to fight on a global stage with a leader such as the PFL. And our co-promotion partners recognize that. And unlike here in the U.S., you know, promoters, you know, we can't stage events and represent fighters. It's much different outside the U.S.
Right.
So these promotions are happy to have another outlet for their talent.
Yeah, no doubt. Well, listen, it's pretty exciting stuff. I mean, what can you tell me after your second season? I mean, were there any specific lessons or, you know, ideas that you took after the second season and said, man, this is what we got to do to keep developing, or, you know, this was a big win or this was a big loss? I mean, were there key lessons that you took out of your second season?
Always, on a lot of levels. But the big takeaway, our first year on ESPN was a success. New Year's Eve is less of a challenge and more of an opportunity based on the audience that we delivered domestically with 400,000 linear. And, you know, outside the U.S., our viewership was 3 million plus.
Wow.
So in a short amount of time, you know, we're really building momentum behind growing fans. And ultimately, that's our job. So I was really happy with the outcome of the season, you know, number one on ESPN, and two, the playoffs. We brought it to it's our first time in Vegas,
mm-hmm.
and I think we did it in big fashion in a big town like that, and with a partner in MGM Mandalay Bay. We did a little different from the other guys, where we did a 3-event residency in the month of October. So we had a great experience there. And from a fighter standpoint, as we look at the success and what's exciting about last season, you know, we look at Kayla Harrison. I mean, Kayla, she did her business. You know, she went pro with us 2 years ago. Last year, we launched the first ever 155 weight class. And Kayla continued on an undefeated streak and is now, you know, the champions, you know, in 155 weight class. She's top 3 ranked fighter in the world.
Yep.
You may have those stats, but you know, we're really proud of what she's achieved and what she's going to do in the sport and with the PFL. And next year, you know, she, like the other champions, will be challenged because the talent level, and is our goal, will elevate year over year. So, you know, 2018, it was the easiest ride to get in and keep you. And, you know, last year, you know, we stepped up our game, and frankly, fighters expect that. Athletes in any sport, okay, any sport, including MMA, want 3 things. Any athlete, whether it's individual athlete or team athlete, they want to compete against the best, right? They want to compete on the largest stage, and they want to be champions, and all that comes with that. And so we're a new alternative to fighters who grew up aspiring to go to one place or the other. But now fighters have options, and top fighters have options. So not just next generation talent, we're a stepping stone. No, you know, we will provide a lot of discovery to fans about next generation, you know, ushering in the next generation of great fighters through the PFL. But we'll also be bringing and top-ranked talent like and championship-level talent or champion-level talent like Rory McDonald's of the world. And that's what really makes it interesting. And the fact that all of our fighters have to earn it, and really love that about the PFL. And that's a big part of what we're all about. You know, fighters have to earn their way.
No question. Well, what can you tease us about 2020? You know, details we don't have yet, but, I mean, is there anything you can share in terms of, you know, when the season's going to start? Will we do the Vegas residency again?
We haven't announced the schedule. Yep, season will start in May. We haven't announced the schedule. We will be announcing, our new fight, who's staying. And, I mean, meaning who we're keeping on the roster. And new fighter signings across the 6 weight classes in February, March. So we'll be announcing those fighters individually. And so we'll be talking more, and we're excited about that. And we'll continue to lead with innovation. So under our smart cage technology this past year, you know, another accomplishment in our view and how we're advancing the sport is every fight, every fighter, they were measured, their punch speed was measured every fight, every fighter. We were the first ever to do that. And those are tools for the athletes, and it's context for the fans, and it's integrated into the live experience. And we will be announcing 3 new innovations within the smart cage that will advance the sport and obviously propel the PFL.
Very cool. And as far as the qualifier series, how do we watch those? Are they going to be distributed live? Will they be taped?
Great question. So in the countries with our co-promotion partners, these are technically their events, and they have those distribution rights. The PFL will be distributing those fights, our road to the PFL fights within their events. With our current broadcast partners, okay, in addition to distributing on our PFL app, PFL Live app, as well as our controlled channels on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitch.
Got it. Very cool. Well, listen, I mean, cool announcement. I guess it's kind of an unofficial kickoff to 2020, you know, kind of a cool way to start it. What's to wrap it up, I guess, I mean, what's the goal this year? What do you want to accomplish to feel like you did good this year?
For 2020, it's all about next level talent and drive and growth of our fan base, you know, just growing our fan base here in the U.S. And then critically important are the continued steps that we're going to take internationally, and International Qualifier Series is just one example of that. So more to come. And what I should say is, while our season starts in May, the PFL's lights are never off. This is preseason, and we got a lot of action going on in anticipation of the start of the season with fights around the world, with International Qualifier Series, other content that we'll be producing to give fans access to our fighters and telling their story leading up to May. So lights are never off. That's what's fun about it.
Okay, so there it was. Pete Murray, optimistic about what the PFL is doing in 2020, throwing out some audience figures there that might surprise some people. I know certainly
surprised me.
I was a little surprised to hear it, but I like what he's saying. And boy, the other thing too that I thought he keyed in on that I think people are so, I don't say ignorant about sometimes, but just don't think about, is when he said, "Listen, of course we're trying to grow in the U.S. but we've got opportunities internationally, man, and there's, you know, there's so much opportunity out there." Boy, and that is what I've tried to stress from day one, when you have all these people that are like, "Man, is the popularity of MMA, does it seem like it's, you know, fallen short? Does
it
seem
plateaued?
Like it's plateaued?" Like, dude, you're looking at one market, man. You're talking about the U.S. Open your eyes, bro. There is opportunity everywhere, and that means TV deals everywhere and money everywhere. I mean, there's opportunity internationally, so – it's cool that they're hearing that as well, because as he said, man, options for fighters, that's a good thing, man. That's just a good thing. Another place for people to be able to make some cash. You know, I think it's good. I saw Lance Palmer over the weekend, man. I was like, that dude has made $2 million. You know what I mean? Like, how amazing is that? You know, I mean, that's awesome to see things like that. So, good for him. Should say, by the way, if you like what you're hearing, and I don't see why you wouldn't, it's high quality MMA content. Mm. So if you like what you're doing, make sure that you're subscribed to wherever you pick it up. My preferred platform is Apple Podcasts. Make sure you're subscribed in there. Make sure you tell some other people about us, man. You got some other friends that are MMA fans. Make sure they're listening. If you can go in there and leave us some feedback, some reviews, man. Love it when people leave some reviews on the podcast app, so you can hopefully leave us 5 stars. We appreciate all that good stuff. So help spread the word, man. It means a lot to us. So listen, I mentioned running into Lance Palmer. I ran into Cub Swanson over there as well. I was at a Bellator 238 this past weekend. It was good to see him actually walking around. I mean, blew out his knee. It's I hated to see that happen, man. Because you
rough.
Know, and I told him that too. I was like, dude, I'm one of these guys that says you guys should be able to compete more, and you should be able to grapple more, because you can make some money, you can have some fun, and you won't get hurt. And I'm like, and then you go and get hurt, man, and pull out your knee. I was like, it sucks. But it was good to see him around, man. He was with his team out there, and with Juan Archuleta, of course, and you know, their crew was all together. But it was good to see him at least up and moving about and starting to make some recovery.
Yeah,
you know?
Did he give sort of a time frame? Or
it's still going to be a while, man.
Yeah.
That ACL,
and you're right,
because
when it happened, it's just like one of those things. They're in the middle of just the grappling, and it wasn't like anything crazy, you know. I mean,
it's just poor positioning on
it. Bad positioning. I guess that's the crazy thing about jiu-jitsu, you know, is that literally if you get in the wrong spot, you could just
be bad for you.
Yank something out. But man, I remember
the shields Dana let off of him immediately.
I remember Dana was in the crowd. Dana was just like, ugh. but he was like, he wasn't the only one.
I know.
Everybody was just like, no, I can't believe we just saw that happen. You know?
So ridiculous.
It was
so terrible. A couple quick thoughts on Bellator 238. I haven't talked about it much since, but Cyborg is still Cyborg, man. And you know, it was the atmosphere. I gotta say, man, the Forum is a really cool place. You know, in the pre-fight podcast, I didn't rag on it, but I did. It's funny because when you go and you do a show at the Forum and you stay at the hotels in Inglewood, I mean, you basically never leave LAX. You know what I mean? So you don't get much of the LA vibe. But as far as a location for a fight, man, that venue is cool, man. It's just something about it's the right size, the seating is set up. I don't know, but it was a good atmosphere. Cyborg, I thought, looked fantastic. She's still Cyborg. You know what I mean? This was, you know, she was measured in her approach, but still powerful. And then once she saw a chance to finish it, man, she did it. And it was funny, man. You know, Julia Budd afterwards said, you know, the forward pressure, the constant forward pressure just threw her off a little bit. And it's crazy because at this point, I mean, everybody knows what Cyborg is going to bring to the table. You know what I mean? She's going to bring forward pressure. She's going to bring powerful strikes. That's what she's going to do. But it still throws people off when they get in there, just because I think, you know, it's hard to get somebody to replicate what she does in there.
Yeah. She's when she is on and she's moving forward and she feels good, she's as devastating as anything. I think it just she felt human after what Amanda was able to do. Everybody sort of forgot what Cyborg was, and Cyborg is a killing machine.
Yep.
So it was fantastic to see her go in there and do what she did. She looked just absolutely incredible. What an impressive display of striking and just that power that we knew that she had. It was just crazy because in the last couple of times we've seen Cyborg fight, we've seen people take the power.
Yep.
And we were like, okay, maybe it's diminished. Maybe something's happening. Okay, this is when people are going to start beating Cyborg. But that was vintage Cyborg. That was Cyborg that looks as good as she has ever done.
And, you know, it's funny because you say vintage, and I think that's the right word, but it's the vintage refined Cyborg as well. You know, not just a wild, you know, aggressive killer. Like, she was measured, you know, and I thought she did a good job of, you know, being patient.
She's gotten so good with
– much better.
With her patience. I think she's been so she's been so fortunate so many times in the past that she could be a little bit more rash because her power, once she laid her hands on people, people were dropping, and then she could just kind of finish them off, you know. But then it got to a point where as she started to have to learn to kind of hold off because people were taking that power, people were evading the punches, and then we started seeing, you know, was stamina an issue, you know, cardio, what's going on, that she learned to kind of control her pacing in there. And ever since she's done that, so to still have that power, because we see people just like Fedor that have that power. Like, that power, it might not be what it was, but it is still devastating.
The last
power.
Thing to go, they always say.
Yeah. So now the fact that she's got the power and she's controlling herself a lot more, she's maturing. She's still maturing into the sport. So, I mean, it's wonderful. So I'm good for her to be a champ again. And it's going to be tough to take that away.
It's going to be very tough to take that away. Darian Caldwell, man, I think he looks like a different animal at 145 pounds, man. Just like – he looks healthy, man. I mean, his weight cuts were awful at 135.
Yeah.
And he looks healthy, and he's fighting great. I felt bad for Adam Borix because I like that kid a lot, man. And you could see the emotion on his sleeve.
Yeah.
That was a great fight. Sergio Pettis had a phenomenal performance, man.
Boy, didn't he look like something.
That was fun. And it was cool, too, for Sergio to come in afterwards and just be like, yeah, man. He was like, I was nervous as hell, man. He's like, I don't tell you guys that you know, ahead of time. But, yeah, I was nervous. And this is, you know. But
that looked like the biggest power shot I think I've ever seen him deliver.
Devastating.
I was like, holy cow, where was this guy at, you know?
Devastating.
Good for him.
Raymond Daniels, obviously, he is very special when it comes to striking. That was a great performance by him. There was a really cool moment. I wish I had my phone on me so I could record it, and I didn't. I was standing at my camera ready to record the scrum, and my phone was sitting back at my computer plugged in, and I wish I would have had it because Jason King, who Raymond Daniels knocked out, was married to – or is married to, I should say, Emily King, who won – the first fight of the night by beating Ava Knight. Now, Emily didn't come immediately back to the back to do her winner's interview because she wanted to watch her husband fight, right? Well, her husband gets, you know, defeated pretty soundly, we'll say, by Raymond Daniels. I mean, if it was a, you know, he got beat up, if it's just an easy way to say it. And it showed Emily briefly, you know, kind of emotional afterwards, of course. Nobody wants to see that happen to a loved one, not your husband. But because she waited to come back, her and Raymond Daniels ended up in the back together, And it was so cool because Emily was leaving the scrum and Raymond was walking to the scrum, and they were both walking, you know, in the same vicinity, and Raymond stopped and talked to her and was basically like, hey, you know, kind of apologizing to a degree, you know, like, I know this is difficult for you, but, you know, your husband, you know, saying good words about her husband. And it was just so cool, the two martial artists, you know, he was basically being, you know, congratulations on your victory tonight. You looked amazing. You know, your husband is a fine competitor. You know, I really appreciate you guys taking the fight. And she was so cool about it too, because, you know, she's like, no. She's like, listen, it's two sides of the coin. You know what I mean? Like, we need opponents as well. And you're just going in and doing your job. There's certainly nothing personal, no hard feelings. You know, it was just a cool moment. Yeah. You know, they didn't have to say anything. To, you know, they could have just passed in the hallway and nobody said anything, you know, but to take that moment to say, hey, listen, I know what you're going through, and, you know, I respect and appreciate you, man. I thought it was a cool moment between martial artists, you know.
That is cool.
It was cool to see. And then, you know, shout-outs to –
Then he leaves the room, and then she starts bad-talking him.
That asshole.
That asshole.
Oh, man.
I appreciate you. Fuck her.
Exactly. Aaron Pico, man, I thought he looked great. And that kid, man, he had so much emotion on. He was wearing his heart on his sleeve all week, too. And I think that kid still got some upside to him, man. He's still so young and has so much talent. I think he's still going to be something. That was a big win for Aaron Pico. AJ Agazarm, I've become fond of that guy, man. He's a good dude.
He's become quite fond of you.
Yeah. Hey, we're boys. And we go like that, man. I like that guy. My boy J.J. Wilson, I told you guys to look out for J.J. Wilson. He went all the way to the second round this time, but he's still undefeated. Curtis Millender, that guy's always fun to talk to, man. He had a big win as well. So a lot of fun out there at Bellator 238.
It was a good card, man.
It was. I really did like it. Same night, just briefly, the card, the UFC card, North Carolina. By the way, if you listen to our pre-fight breakdown, I said, make sure you catch the first couple fights of the night. I was like, then switch over to Bellator and then come back for the end. And boy, did I get it right, man. I nailed it. I just want to pat myself on the back right here, man.
There you go.
Herbert Burns with a big knockout over Nate Landwehr to start the night. Man, just phenomenal highlight there from Herbert Burns. Then Brett Johns, Tony Gravely was a fun fight. Brett Johns is tough, and he deserved that win. But Tony Gravely, man, that guy is going to be good, man. He's got a ton of experience, but I just like that kid, man. He's got a great attitude and a great work ethic, and I like him. I think he's gonna be good. And then you wound up with six straight decisions. It kind of slows things down a little bit. I said I thought the middle of the card would be a little slow, but then, man, Angela Hill came out and had a big win there. She's on a little run. Alex Perez, it looks like he might be a contender at flyweight. Michael Chiesa, man, that dude is the real deal at 170 pounds. And then Curtis Blaydes, the big win there. Curtis Blaydes, happy for Curtis Blaydes. He's talking about title shot, and he is up there at the top. He's just in a rough spot right now, man. But with the two losses to Ngannou, he can't really be calling for a shot until Ngannou has one. You know what I mean? Now, if Ngannou loses to Jairzinho Rozenstruik, okay, then you start talking, because I'm sure Rozenstruik will be like, well, what about me? I'm 5-0 now. I'm the hot new commodity. But Blaydes could say, hey, you know, back of the line. But he's just
– Or at least just behind me.
At least behind me. Yeah, exactly. It's the second in line. It's just behind me. But the other thing, too, is you just got to get a title fight in there. And Stipe, I mean, you can't really blame Stipe for giving Cormier the cold shoulder a little bit, right? I mean, Cormier did it to him.
Yeah.
But you know, hopefully they get something announced.
He knows it's a tough fight. I mean, it's no guarantee. He went in there and looked really good the last time he fought Daniel. But you're right. He made him wait. And there's probably easier fights for him out there. So if you had your choice, I mean, would you pick the guy that was – a dominant champ?
No, but I've got the different attitude than these guys. I would take the easiest road possible. Yeah. These guys are always like, give me the toughest test possible.
I want to fight the toughest.
I'm telling you, I would not. I would be like, dude, who is the suckiest guy you got that I can still get paid?
Yeah, that one.
I want that
one. That's the one.
Who's the worst matchup? Like, who has the easiest style for me to beat? That's what I want.
To be like, Dana, you know, you guys got a great promotional. Find a way for the number 34 guy to be the guy I fight. And you guys spin him like he's the new upcoming thing.
Talk him
up, man.
What
do you mean he's 0-0? That's fine. He should deserve the title shot.
So you're saying he's undefeated in the UFC?
He's undefeated. Someone's always got to go on this one, fellas.
That's great. All right, listen. Well, I mentioned not a lot of MMA this weekend, other than CFFC, of course, which you definitely want to tune in for. The other stuff, you know, it's okay. But Cage Fury Fighting Championship, Saturday night, UFC Fight Pass. That's solid. You're going to want to watch that. But I will say, if you're looking for something a little different, World Lightweight Championships returns this weekend. It's actually – kind of overnight tonight, basically. I would imagine by the time most people listen to it, it'll already happen. But, of course, that's the great thing about Fight Pass. You can just pick it up on demand. It happens from over there in Myanmar. I've become a fan of Letway. I enjoy it. It is, of course, a striking art. It's, you know, everything is legal, basically. Punches, elbows, kicks, knees,
headbutts.
and you only get to wear hand wraps. You don't wear gloves either. It's pretty wild, and the atmosphere that you get there is pretty intense. But you know, I'd heard some rumblings that they're looking to expand. You know, they do shows over in Myanmar right now, in Southeast Asia, which is where the sport originated. But they're looking to spread. They're looking to go international, including a show in the United States in 2020. So with that in mind, I had a chance to speak with Gerald Ng, I think is how you say it. It's N-G, which I, so yeah. I apologize. If you, it's kind of a, yeah, it's not really a good English equivalent, I guess. But he is the president of World Letweight Championship. And
I think it's pronounced Dolo.
Maybe Dolo. I had a chance to speak with him about the event and about kind of his plans. And so if you're looking, like I said, if you're looking for something a little different on UFC Fight Pass, their event is Friday. And here's my my conversation with Gerald from World Letweight Championship. Hey, Gerald, can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you loud and clear.
Ah, fantastic, fantastic. This is still a good time for you?
Yeah, yeah, for sure. No worries. It's fight week, so it's a crazy, crazy time.
No, I understand. Let's get into it, man. I mean, start out. I mean, Lethway obviously is kind of a new thing here in the United States, or at least not a well-known thing. So give me an idea just kind of how you started and how you, you know, kind of got into it. I mean, was this something you were passionate about or just a business opportunity? How did you get into it?
I was a big martial arts fan growing up, and worked in one championship for a bit, and I've always been crazy martial arts, but even for a big martial arts fan as myself growing up, you never really hear about Lewe. It wasn't one of the sports that people talk about, and I guess it's because Myanmar wasn't that open back then, and there wasn't access to quality content, there wasn't really professional promotions putting up events. We created World Level Championship about 4 years ago. A bunch of Burmese businessmen who sponsored World Level, sponsored one championship, and we are still their event partner in Myanmar right now. And we were just having a drink together, and they were like, this amazing sport in our country, and nobody knows about it, and we want to get into sports, but we don't want to do something that everybody else in the world can do. And Lewe was just the perfect platform for us to showcase the culture of Myanmar and its amazing traditions and history, and put on amazing shows.
Nice. I guess for people that haven't seen it, I mean, the way I would describe it, I guess, is Muay Thai, but with no gloves and with headbutts. I mean, is there a better way or a simpler way or a more eloquent way to describe it? I mean, how would you describe it to somebody that hasn't seen it before?
It's so much more nuanced than that. Because of the differences in the rules and because of how the sport has evolved over the years, it's just the techniques involved are completely different. And right now, a lot of Lewe gyms here teach completely different stuff that could actually work in MMA fights. It just hasn't been used as prevalently as other sports. And there's this whole plethora of arsenal of strikes that people that are waiting to be discovered. And that's part of our goal as well, is that we want to eventually be able to open up gyms in all the different countries, like how you have taekwondo schools in every city in the world. Our plan is to be able to do that for Lewe, and then that's our gateway to making it mainstream as well and making people understand that it kind of looks like Muay Thai, but it's completely different.
So I was going to ask you, I mean, what is the acceptance level of Lewe in Myanmar? I mean, I know it's kind of it's you know, that's the host nation, so to speak. But I mean, is everybody okay with it? I mean, it is a little bit violent, a little bit graphic, or whatever. I mean, is it something that's accepted throughout the country, or is it a niche sport, so to speak? What's the acceptance level there?
It's ingrained in the culture of Burmese people. Lewe has been around for 1,000 years, so it's kind of part of everyday life for them. So it has a huge fan following here. But most of the promoters here, like I said, are still doing it in a really old-fashioned way. So fans know about Lewe. Some hardcore fans love Lewe. But they've never seen Lewe partner together with amazing promotion, amazing production quality. And that is what we're trying to do. We're trying to elevate the level of the entertainment value with watching Lewe with our show.
Yeah. Give me an idea of like the career of the athletes. I mean, guys that do this, can they do it a long time? I mean, it does seem like it's maybe more physically taxing on guys than maybe other martial arts or other combat sports might be. I mean, is the long term health of these guys a concern as they compete?
I think what we're seeing now is that Lewe is kind of the ultimate striking martial art, and it might not be for everybody right now, but it will eventually. And we are already commissioning a few studies with universities, with hospitals, both here and internationally, to find out the long-term effects of doing Lewe against doing other martial arts. Every kind of sport, basically, American football, soccer, they all come with inherent risks. And I think the best that we can do right now is to find out what the inherent risk is compared to other sports. But from just no medical data, just from witnessing these guys, Burmese guys have been fighting since they were teenagers, and they've been doing it till they were 30, till they're 40, and they have long, healthy lives after. So there are always going to be a couple of freak injuries. There are always going to be a couple of guys who get injured and have a recurring injury and have to stop. But we have not had any evidence of long-term injury that is more significant than doing any other sport.
Very nice. So give me the vision. I mean, I've watched a couple of the shows, and I'll be honest. I mean, I'm into it. I think it's incredibly interesting, man. It changes things. Obviously, the no gloves, the headbutts. I mean, it changes everything. So what do you see as the ultimate vision? I mean, is this a global type property, or is it just kind of going to stay in Asia? I mean, what's the thought process for you?
No, absolutely. We have huge plans in 2020 to expand globally, beginning with Cambodia, Thailand, Japan, and we're going to do our first show in the US in the fourth quarter of this year. And we believe that there's a legitimate position within the whole mainstream sports media landscape of Lewe content. And the way we try to position ourselves is we sell ourselves as combat sports to fans of the UFC, fans of MMA, fans of kickboxing. But with these guys, people have been accustomed or conditioned to MMA. And when you talk to an MMA fan now, you think that it's so easily accepted, but it wasn't like that 20 years ago, and basically that's where we are at right now. And we believe that we can go on a similar trajectory for Lewe, and we also position ourselves in a way where if you're not a huge fan of the striking in general, to incorporate the culture, the country we are in, of the people, and it becomes kind of when you watch the show, you see Lewe right now in Myanmar. So we've only done shows in Myanmar so far, and you watch it and you will want to go to that place as a destination, both to check out World Lewe Championship as well as to check out the destination there. So there, I feel like there is that space within the sports market for us. And we've expanded so quickly in the past 3 years. The sky really is the limit.
That's awesome. As far as the United States goes, have you started to look into regulation and that sort of thing? Is it going to be an issue, or does it fit within the guidelines that we currently have in place in the United States?
I think if you just look at what the UFC did in the early 90s, that's kind of where we're at right now. There are states that will accept us. There are places where we can hold shows. And there are also commissions that are steadfast in their refusal to sanction Lewe at this moment. But the initial discussions, and we are pretty advanced in these discussions, are that we can have a plethora of states where we can do our show in, and with this, with getting our foot in the door there and starting and proving to them what we do and the impact on the athletes, we believe that eventually it can be accepted all over the country.
Nice. You know, you mentioned MMA. I know Seth Brzezinski came over there and things didn't go so well for him. Are you planning on having more kind of crossover type fights like that where you take MMA veterans? Is that in the plans, or, you know, did his maybe lack of success, maybe, you know, shy you away from bringing over MMA fighters?
No, not at all. And Seth was an amazing professional. He was, he came in, did everything that you want a consummate professional to do. And he left and he was incredibly excited about the opportunity and the experience. And he's been talking to everyone in the US about our show and trying to get fighters to join World Heavyweight Championship. And we are in 2020, we've done 10 shows so far. The show on Friday is going to be our 11th. And what we're going to do as we expand events and with more shows internationally is get more recognizable names to compete in Lewe. And I've spoken to hundreds of really encouraging so far. So we're really, really close to signing a few guys that almost anybody who's into combat sports will know. UFC guys, ex-kickboxing champions, karate champions, taekwondo champions. So it's really, really exciting times. And any major name that becomes a free agent right now, we are going to be going in there with an offer.
That's awesome. Well, what should we look for on this Friday show? If somebody's tuning in maybe for the first time, I know, like you said, maybe not the recognizable names, but are there any insights you can offer us into maybe who we should be keeping an eye on, or, you know, what fights you're expecting to really be exciting?
So the main event is the middleweight world heavyweight champion. And right now the current champion is this Burmese guy by the name of Tutu. And in Myanmar, he's recognizable all over the country. He can walk on the streets without people stopping him for photos. He can't go anywhere. And but on his whole martial arts career, he had one blemish, which was he went to Thailand when he was really, really early in his career, and he lost to a fighter from Uzbekistan. And this Uzbek fighter, Namjon Tutapov, his career after that fight, after that win, has been on a skyward trajectory as well. And he's one of those guys that he could beat any of the best in the world at any given day, but just that he doesn't have the international name right now. This is going to be the biggest fight we've done. Can Tutu avenge his one loss, or can Namjoon do it again, beat him, and this time in his sport and get his title, which is going to cause headline news all over the country, and it's really, really exciting.
Very cool. I will definitely be tuned in, man. You can count a fan in me. I really enjoy it, man. The music in the background and the whole atmosphere, man, it really makes for something fun to watch. But I guess if maybe you're approaching somebody for the first time, or they haven't tuned in, you know, how do you pitch it? What's your sales pitch to them to say why they should, you know, tune into Fight Pass and check it out for the first time?
If you have even an inkling of affection towards combat sports, I would sell this event as the most wholesome, holistic experience you can get. And I don't know if I'm using the word right, but if you want to be entertained by fights, and like you said, if you want to enjoy the whole experience that goes around the fight and you want to experience the culture, then this is the one event you should definitely watch. And you'll be fascinated by what you learn in terms of the crazy techniques that these guys use.
All right, so that was the World Lightweight Championship president joining us from all the way over in Myanmar. Appreciate his time. Had a little connectivity issue there from time to time, but overall, I was happy that the connection stayed up. Thank you to the fine folks at WhatsApp for making that voice call possible. By the way, if you're loving what you're hearing, and I don't see why you wouldn't, because it's high quality MMA content. Take it to the next level. Patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. If you'd like to reach out to us and subscribe there, give us a financial donation. Help support the show. There is a cost involved in it, not to mention, we're just giving you all this content for free.
Yeah.
We certainly would appreciate it.
Yeah.
It would mean a lot to us.
Somebody's got to help replenish the frosty beverages.
The frosty beverages, that's a significant cost.
Almost as much as the server costs.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it. but no, we would appreciate that. By the way, that's something I really want to work on this year in 2020, is kind of building a nice community there. And with that in mind, I will say Patreon member Hans Bjorklund, he had asked recently about Frank Mir and how he's feeling about after stem cells. And so I wanted to follow up with him. I'm actually going to do – it kind of spurned a little thought in me, and thanks to Hans, I'm going to do a little bit further story on this and basically that the whole stem cell process and what's going on. So I'm going to do a little bit more on it. But I had a chance to talk to Frank Mir the other night, and so I wanted to give Hans that update and, of course, everybody else. Frank Mir did go down to Colombia and get the stem cell treatment. Of course, they have to go basically outside the United States because the stem cell treatments are not legal right now. The FDA, I think, is a little bit hesitant to get involved in all that stuff and get it approved right now. So you have to go outside the country to do it. And I guess once you do it, it's recommended to take a month off, I guess, to kind of let the process take, so to speak. You know, huh. The cells kind of do their thing. So he just took a month off, but he's getting back in the gym right now. So he's just starting to get back to training. I think actually this week was the first week he was back in the gym. My understanding is he has nothing on the books right now with Bellator, but he does have one fight left on his deal, as best I understand it, and he's looking to get something booked quickly, actually. So maybe something in the next couple of months we'll have some news on Frank Mir and what his next fight is. But he is back in the gym, starting to get himself into shape. Said he was a little more conscientious than he has been in the past of letting himself get overweight when he doesn't have a fight booked. So he was a little bit more conscientious about this time, so he doesn't have as much to kind of lose. And like I said, we're actually going to do a little bit more research on the stem cell stuff. And another one, another shout-out I want to give to the Patreon community over there as well. I did get a chance to see, of course, myself and Cold Coffee. Both you can reach us both on there. There's a messaging platform there on Patreon if you're a member of. You can certainly reach us out. And I did want to give a shout out to Jared Sorensen as well, man. I saw the messages that you guys were sharing back and forth ahead of your surgery, man. And I thought that was pretty cool of him to chime in with his words of wisdom and words of encouragement. Yeah. So, man, that's
maybe
cool.
I'll share some pics on there for our Patreon. Oh. If anybody wants to see some random ass pictures of tumors on spines.
Yeah, give us some tumor pictures, man. So that would be huge, man.
Maybe before or after picture.
What do they put it in, like, formaldehyde in like a glass jar or something,
God,
let you
gross.
Hang on to it?
But I could at least show MRI or like CT scans at least beforehand or something.
Well, there you go. If you want updates, join patreon.com/MMA Roadshow. Cold Coffee will keep you updated on his procedure. So
I will not live stream. Like I hear that's a thing that people do a lot of times now, is like live stream their like surgeries.
Live stream surgery. You're gonna be out though, right?
I know, it wouldn't be me.
Oh, but somebody
else
does live stream?
Like there was something like some woman had brain surgery recently and live streamed it.
Can you do that? I mean
I think you can.
The doctors would have to sign off with
it. I'm sure they did or whatever. Probably for just I don't know, better science, you know, just to show like this is what happens, you know, and if you're willing to show it. Could be educational.
It could be. And you know what? I mean I don't know if it would add I can't imagine it would add pressure, I mean, to what they're doing, but I mean, they shouldn't be trying to hide anything, right?
Yeah. I mean, most of them are probably already sort of documented in some sense, but you never know. You sign when you go to do the surgery, you sign away the parts they say that this might be filmed, because they, if there is a procedure that can be something that can be used for education, something better.
Yeah.
It is something, like, even in my case, I mean, it's not common, but to have two different surgeons, if they have to kind of work it together, this is something they could use to say, this is how, you know, if you're taking one surgeon that has to go from the back and one that has to go from the front, how the handoff can happen or whatever. Hopefully it's like, see what great ways everything works or whatever. I mean, so you kind of sign off to allow them to videotape it and right, to do all that kind of stuff for educational stuff. So you never know.
I dig it, man. We'll share whatever you can. Obviously we'll be sending, good vibes your way. I will be in Houston next week. Of course, you were going to be on that show with me, but obviously not making
not
the trip now.
Houston.
You'll be recovering, maybe a few days in the hospital, from what we understand. Based on my, we're not trying to maximize it too, but it's a pretty big surgery. We don't make too big of a deal of it.
Yeah.
But it's a pretty big surgery, so you're going to be in there for a couple days recovering. I'll be there. My mom is actually going to drive out from Dallas, so I'll see her on fight night. But we will do a show. Cole Coffey has told me he's going to edit this bad boy.
I don't make it work.
It may be. We'll see how it goes. It may end up being. So if next week it sounds like the intro song doesn't sound right, or the outro isn't good, or maybe the edit, maybe it might mean because I ended up having to edit the thing. But hopefully everything is good, and Cole Coffey has no problem.
We'll make it work.
Just getting his computer.
That's how we do it. We'll make it work.
That's it. That's how we do it. We're not 253 consecutive weeks, man. We're not stopping now.
Surgery and hospitals ain't going to stop this.
It ain't nothing, man. All right. Well, listen, like I said, send good vibes Cole Coffey's way. Hopefully by the time most people are listening to this, he'll be in the procedure, or maybe done already. But yeah, hit the man up on Twitter, or hit him up on patreon.com/the MMA Roadshow. And yeah, we'll one way or another, we'll have episode 254, and I bet we'll even try to check in with you.
We'll see.
And hopefully tell your family to roll some tape when you're coming out of the anesthesia, man. I want to hear you hitting on the nurse or something like that.
I was afraid I might do some shit like that.
Of course you will. Of course you will. All right. Cole Coffey's going to be fine. We'll see everybody next week. In the meantime, thanks for listening.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Ever feel like planning a trip is almost as fun as taking it? Hotel comparisons, restaurant reservations, a perfectly timed itinerary. What if your love of planning travel could actually become a source of income? As a Fora advisor, it can. Fora is a modern travel agency built for people who love to plan travel and help others travel well. With best-in-class training, powerful booking tech, and a vibrant global community of experts sharing real insider knowledge, you can confidently build your own travel business on your terms, from anywhere. Every hotel, cruise, and experience you book earns you commission. And with access to more than 7,000 preferred travel partners, from iconic brands to boutique gems, you'll unlock VIP perks like upgrades, resort credits, and late checkout. The kind of elevated travel experiences most travelers never get. Now's the time to turn your passion for travel into a fulfilling business with Fora. Become a Fora advisor today at foratravel.com/advisor. That's foratravel.com/advisor.